Hello, Internet, and welcome to All of My Issues. In this episode, episode 9, we have a very special Halloween edition in which we discuss our top 5 horror films. And we will discuss why we selected those films. But before we get into our spooktacular selections, let's first do a recap of some of the new movie trailers that have come out since our last episode. Enjoy. Hello, Internet, and welcome to All of My Issues. I'm Rick.
I'm Chris.
And it's Sam.
All right, Sam's joining us remotely from his Batcave to join us in this episode. So he might sound a little bit different, but we have some things definitely to talk about this week. First off, we want to do a trailer recap of some of the trailers that have come out since we recorded our last episode. First up, I think we'll talk about the new Rogue One trailer. What do you guys think about that? Have you guys, I'm assuming everyone's watched it.
I have, yes.
Multiple times, right?
Yes.
So, any initial thoughts on it? How do you guys feel about the new trailer? Did it reveal new information that we didn't have before?
My initial thought, and this is just true of every trailer for Rogue One, is I get more excited for the movie as a whole. A movie that I wasn't necessarily excited for, other than the fact it had Star Wars in the name.
yeah.
I have gradually become more and more excited for, and the thought of just being able to see Darth Vader going nuts on someone again is going to just, is got me so pumped.
Yeah, I agree.
I have the same feeling where it's the first Rogue One trailer. I was pleasantly surprised at how excited I felt about it, and this one even more so.
Right.
Just like revealing just a little bit more about the characters. Looks like there's a whole new slew of characters that we can get to learn about, and just, you know, it's like a whole other area of the Star Wars universe that we haven't really covered before, and some possible hints at maybe why there was actually a weakness in the Death Star. I don't know if you've heard this rumor yet or not, Sam, but Chris and I were talking about it before we started recording. Do you know what I'm talking about at all?
No.
Well, in that trailer, they kind of allude to the one guy that's
Mads Mikkelsen.
There you go. As being, you know, the architect for the Death Star, if you will. And possibly hinting at him purposely putting that exhaust port weakness of the Death Star in there on purpose.
So, okay.
So I don't know, kind of let that sink in before, because, you know, there used to be these huge debates about, oh, why is the Death Star so easy to destroy? There's just this, you know, exhaust port that you can, you know, use to blow up the whole Death Star.
Family Guy, Bob mentioned it.
Family Guy. Exactly. Okay. So that seems really compelling to me that might be something that's covered in this movie.
Yeah, I very much hope that is kind of the case. I hope they don't do too much, like, retconning of existing things, but I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, I am too. I agree too. I think, you know, they don't need to retcon everything, but that little element, that'd be a neat, nice little addition to the Star Wars universe. Kind of like filling in some gaps that may have been a kind of a storyline weakness before. So that...
And that probably would explain why there's no rails.
Yeah. Exactly.
They want them to accidentally fall. Yeah.
I agree with you guys. I think that's an interesting take, especially if the rebel, the rebellion had someone, you know, one of the architects do that on purpose. That's that would be a good spin. I think that would hold up.
And it seems like too, like in the trailer, maybe they hinted at where the whole Rogue One name came from too. They do that brief little
where they
what's our call sign or, mm-hmm. or whatever. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but I thought that was kind of cool too. So we get an idea of where that came from. So I guess is there anything else we want to mention about the Rogue One trailer before we move on to the next one? Or
No.
All right.
I think we covered it.
All right. How about the new Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 trailer?
Can I just say, I love Rocket.
Yeah.
I do. He's my favorite character.
I wasn't planning on that trailer coming out anywhere near this early, but
yeah,
I didn't even really realize that it's this summer that it comes out.
I didn't either.
I was thinking, oh, that's got to be another year out or something like that. I hadn't really thought about, but man, like as soon as I saw the trailer, I'm like, oh, I can't wait for it's in May, I think, is when it's supposed to come out. So
May or March.
March is the Logan trailer, actually.
Logan trailer, you're right. Yeah. I got them mixed up.
Which we'll talk about after this. But seeing Drax again,
seeing Baby Groot riding.
Yeah. Exactly. How fantastic is that?
Role reversal there.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to get used to Chris Pratt with a goatee, with a blonde goatee.
Yeah, that's a little bit weird. I was also interested because they put out a picture right before they released the teaser, and the picture shows, like, it says Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and there were two characters on the poster as guardians that I wasn't necessarily expecting to be with the Yondu and I can't remember her name. It's Karen and Gillum or whatever the actress.
Nebula.
Nebula.
Is that even? I wasn't sure if that was Nebula or not in the trailer.
I wasn't sure. Clearly her in the poster.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Really interesting. See, I have not seen the poster yet, but huh? Well, that is
the interesting thing about that is I know. On the Guardians of the Galaxy animated series, what's his name? I can't think of Yondu. Yondu's like, he's somewhat part of the Guardians of the Galaxy a little bit. He's like, hey, I'm one of you guys now for like a short period of time. So maybe that is the case. And I think I remember watching them at the New York Comic Con, and he was mentioning that, you know, he's now one of the Guardians.
I think I remember seeing that too. There's been a couple of different incarnations of his character, I think, in the comics and stuff like that. And I think at least the first incarnation that I can think of, he was actually one of the Guardians from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like seeing that he has like a full-on mohawk.
Yeah.
Too. So I was like, oh, that's nice that they kind of included that.
I read this on Reddit, so just bear with me. Put on there that scene where he's walking and the bodies are look like they're falling. If they don't play It's Raining Men during that scene, I'm going to be very disappointed.
that would go well though with all the other music that they have in the previous movie. That's the one thing I wanted them to have new music in the trailer.
Yeah, not just the Hooked on a Feeling, but
yeah. But I mean, it works.
It'll come, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure too.
That's their calling. That's their calling song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So they had
to. Either way, it's just made me more excited about the movie. The interaction between Drax and Star-Lord too, fantastic.
Yeah.
Drax giving Star-Lord a hug.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Pathetic.
You need to find someone as pathetic as you. That's great. That is great.
And Star-Lord's like, I didn't say I wanted a hug. I said no. This is supposed to be literal.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man. That movie just looks like so much fun.
And it's nice, too. The teaser reminded you why you liked the first one.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good job, Marvel people.
Exactly. Hopefully that's another one that'll knock it out of the park, because that seems like it. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, like, when the first one first came out, I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not quite sure. But after seeing it, I'm like, I want to see the second one if it comes out.
Yeah.
And I'm more excited now
than
I was. Yeah, because when that movie came out, I didn't even know I wanted a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
I had zero hope for it to be anything.
Yep.
And literally watching Star-Lord use that rat creature as a microphone in the very first scene. Yep, I'm on board.
Yep, this is it.
I needed Chris Pratt in Marvel Universe.
Yep, I had no idea how much I wanted him in the Marvel Universe. Yeah, because I remember even when they first announced they're going to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I was like, what? I'm like, oh, man.
And then I thought to myself, man, how bad must DC feel? That they're that they've made Guardians of the Galaxy into this hit, and they can't make a Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, or a good Superman movie for crying out loud. You know, it's like, oh man,
And don't get started with Green Lantern.
Oh no, right. Man, yeah. And that should have been good, really.
Yeah,
I don't even understand how that was such a disaster, but I don't get it, but. All right, enough DC movie bashing, I guess. The DC we still have hope for DC though. Maybe they'll turn around.
Yeah, Suicide Squad kind of kept them afloat.
So. Yep, that's true. That's true. So, all right, I guess we'll move on to the Logan trailer now. What are the thoughts?
How good is that trailer?
That trailer,
yeah,
it looks really good.
The it looks like we're getting Reavers.
Yeah.
Which makes me happy. I did not know this, but apparently Mr. Sinister?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. The lead villain, I guess, is supposed to be Mr. Sinister. I don't know that for a fact. I've just kind of heard or read rumors about that being the lead villain online. And, you know, we didn't really see a glimpse of Mr. Sinister or anyone that looked...
We didn't really see a main villain necessarily. We just saw a group of Reavers, so...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so good. Perfect choice of music.
Yeah.
And it
just looks like it's going to really focus more on the characters themselves. Like it doesn't look like it's going to be... I'm sure there's going to be action in it, but it doesn't look like that's going to be...
Focus.
Exactly. Where it's going to be like a CG, you know.
It looks like we're getting character development.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Now, Sam, I've not read the Old Man Logan series at all. Have you?
I did. I'm trying to remember, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
I think they're taking different elements of that.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I wasn't sure about either, because I started reading that storyline, and I think I only got, like, one issue into it, and I didn't go any further. So, you know, and I don't know how much it's sticking to it either. So,
one of the questions I had while watching the trailer is Professor X, is that just someone in his mind, or is he still alive?
I was wondering the same thing.
Oh,
maybe Professor X left a piece of his personality in his mind? Purely speculation, but...
That would kind of explain...
Because I don't understand why he's still alive otherwise.
Yeah, because my interpretation of the whole Old Man Logan story is that it takes place, you know... quite a ways into the future. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in assuming that. And...
You're right.
Okay. Because I don't know. Maybe that's one of the things they changed with this tape, too. I don't know.
A potential Old Man Logan spoiler at this point, too. I've heard that Wolverine has killed most of the mutants himself.
Oh, for real? I did not know that.
Through some sort of, I don't know. I don't know if it was mind control or what, but
really, that would be interesting.
There is in the comics. There's an Old Man Logan in our time now, who's from a possible future. And what had happened was, I'm trying to remember the person who they got into Wolverine's head and made Wolverine see like all their enemies, all the X-Men enemies that were in the X-Mansion. And so he just went berserk and started fighting them all. And when it wore off, he realized it was all the X-Men.
Ah, so, interesting. Interesting.
So he went into Reclusa, and then what happened with the Secret War, Marvel storyline and everything, he somehow got into our present day, and he's now a member of Storm's X-Men, and he's trying to stop whatever, trying to figure out the time when that all happened and trying to prevent it from happening.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because the thing that I read too, I don't know if this is true or not, but seeing the trailer and with Wolverine having some scars on his back, I heard that his healing factor is not really working anymore either. Does that happen in the Old Man Logan story? Do you recall?
Actually, that happens in Wolverine. That's technically kind of how Wolverine dies.
Oh.
Because this Old Man Wolverine is from a different kind of timeline universe. Our Wolverine is actually currently dead because his healing factor stopped working, and basically person, like the doctor from Weapon X, wanted to seek revenge on Wolverine. And first they sent like all of his children that he didn't know about to try to kill him, and Wolverine killed them all, and then realized that those were his kids, and then some other people were in trouble from this doctor, and Wolverine went and destroyed basically Weapon X, and in the process died.
Huh.
He had no healing factor.
Okay.
So the storyline is called Death of Wolverine. So if you guys want to pick it up at your local comic book store. I have it at my house if you guys want to read it. So.
All right. Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, I guess we're all in agreement that the Logan trailer looks awesome.
Yes.
And maybe we'll get a Wolverine movie that
a great standalone Wolverine movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm trying to wonder if that girl, I wonder what her mutant power is, or is she an actual character that exists in the Marvel universe?
I feel like she is going to be the cinematic universe version of X-23.
Okay.
And that's kind of like the hint that I got too, where
Xavier says she's exactly like you.
Ah.
Yeah. And I saw some stills online kind of loosely hinting at that, where they had vials of, like, Wolverine's blood. It said something like Weapon X or Logan on it. And I guess one of the theories is that they may have taken that blood sample and used that to create her, basically.
Right.
Which I would love if she has claws and you don't see it through most of the movie, and then something happens and just BA scene where she just goes berserker.
That would be fantastic. Takes out a bunch of Reavers.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see too, is just like Wolverine jumping headlong into a pile of Reavers and you just see metal parts flying in the air. I want to see that.
I do too.
You know what though, also, I think they might have had Lady Deathstrike in there, because there's a scene where Wolverine's on the ground and he's stopping some sort of claw.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, towards the end of the trailer. Yeah, there's you just see him kind of popping his claws out, something coming down that he's blocking, and it looks like claws.
Oh,
so possibly maybe X-23, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell because you don't really see.
Yeah,
what's going
really
on.
Didn't give you, yeah, she might have survived X2, X Men United. So.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I don't know. Well, I guess that probably is a good place to wrap up our trailer recap. How about we get on to the main topic of this podcast, which is our top five horror films.
Okay.
Where we've each of us have picked five horror films for one reason or another. And we're going to mention them and describe them and basically explain why we enjoy these films and why we chose them. So, who wants to go first?
I can.
You go. All right.
In no particular order, they're kind of in order, as best I could do. I was explaining, this is like trying to pick my favorite kid. And trying to come up with five. I came up with a list of 22, and after I was done, thought of a couple more that could have gone on the list. I really like horror movies, or at least I really like ones that are really good or really bad. So these are for me my top five movies in terms of, I don't want to say influenced my life because that makes me sound creepy, but impacted, I guess, my life in terms of either I quoted them a lot or they scared the living crap out of me or something. So number five, I'm going to go with Evil Dead 2. I prefer the sequel to the original because it kind of recaps the original for the first half and then it does its own thing and adds a large level of humor in there.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell was born to play the role of Ash. I'm so thankful he grew up in the neighborhood with Sam Raimi and that this happened. Just in high school, we used to quote the movie constantly. People would walk past and be like, "Dead by Dawn," or whatever. I just can't say enough good things. It's I don't know. Do we want to recap the movie or?
I guess we could give like a brief recap. I mean, probably most people
know these.
Know the storyline, the Deadites, them. Finding
the Necronomicon. So I
totally agree with you about the greatness of that movie. I mean, that's definitely one of my favorite films too. Out of that whole franchise, Evil Dead 2 is definitely, I think, the strongest one, just because of this whole thing. I like what they did with it.
Yeah,
the fact that it's like the first Evil Dead, but completely different.
Right,
because it's like the first one is like more like a straight-on
horror movie.
Yeah.
Where they tried to truly be scary, and in this one, they kept a little bit of the scary, but they added that humor, the slapstick, the better special effects,
and then just, like, the gratuitous blood. Like, right. You know, and it's like...
Yeah.
You know,
as you're watching Ash slowly go crazy, and, you know, just the hand scene is just...
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no.
And I remember the first time I watched that movie just thinking, man, I've never, ever seen anything like this before.
And that's really what it is. That's why it made my list. I never saw a movie like it, or really even since, unless I'm talking Ash versus Evil Dead, and I don't count that.
Yeah. So. that's one of the movies that I kind of really kind of like was thinking of possibly putting on my list too, just because of, the impact it's had on me too, just because of how much I love that film. And I didn't pick that one, and I had the same problem going through the horror films as well. Like I just kept trying to think of different ones to pick, and so I kind of came up with a series of movies that I tried to pick for basically entirely different reasons. One being the one I'm going to share now, which is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original 1976 film. That movie, I remember watching that in high school for the first time, and just like the documentary type style that film is filmed in,
mm-hmm.
is just, I don't know, it just makes it so much more creepy, and it's crazy to me too, like where there really is kind of a lack of blood in that film,
mm-hmm.
but yet it's still so creepy and just so, you know, just it just gives you this feeling watching it that this is really something that really happened, or just you know, it's a creepy, crazy family in the middle of nowhere, and makes me never want to go to Texas.
I will never have a Texas barbecue.
Exactly, never.
Never.
So, I mean, because wasn't it kind of like based on a true story? Or
yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's based on a killer named Ed Gein from the 1960s or late 50s, and he only actually killed a couple people. Only, as if that makes it better or something. But he mostly, yeah. He's actually the basis of Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs, and he's also the basis of Norman Bates and Psycho.
Okay.
So I guess it would have had to have been the 50s because Psycho came out in 1960. So, but he was just a weird guy that lived out in the woods that actually made a suit out of people and women and would dance in the moonlight. He was weird guy. Yeah. So the house is kind of based on him. But he didn't actually use a chainsaw. He mostly dug up bodies. He was a weirdo.
Yeah. So I guess we go with like loosely based.
But they made it seem like it was.
They did.
They marketed it that way.
They did. Yeah. And it seemed like around that time period, like they did that with a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Like even like The Exorcist, based on a true story. I believe that starts out like that as well. So it's like they kind of really.
Spoiler alert, this is in my top five, so...
Oh, is it? Yes. Is it? Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, they purposely didn't put as much blood in it because the director, Toby Hooper, he wanted to try to get a PG rating.
That's
it did not work out for him.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, but, like, you know, Toby Hooper's take on it, I mean, you know, there wasn't really, like, there's that scene where they take... where Leatherface takes that girl, puts her on a hook.
Yeah.
There's no, you don't see blood or anything, but you hear
the sound
and you see these buckets like on the floor. Mm-hmm. You don't see blood dripping in the buckets or anything like that. But as soon as you see them, you see the hook, you see her put on the hook, you know exactly what those buckets are for.
Right.
And it's just like that just.
And the other iconic scene where the guy walks in to the house, and he gets over close to the door, and Leatherface just comes out and hits him over the head, just so brutal. One shot.
Yeah, yeah.
The sound of that shot is terrifying.
Oh, it is.
And then the guy has, I've never seen death throes in a movie before.
Yeah.
And the guy goes through all the, like, twitching and everything, and Leatherface just drags him off and slams the door shut. And that was probably...
Yeah.
That was symbolic of the slamming of my innocence as a moviegoer. Because I watched this movie at entirely too young of an age.
Yeah.
And it terrified me. That, ugh.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that is... Yeah. I know the scene, the exact scene that you're talking about. Like, sledgehammer to to the head, and it's like the way they would take out cattle.
Yes,
you know,
and that's really what it feels like. Yeah, just some really disheartening imagery in that movie.
Oh yeah.
Just for what it's worth, it's just I find it to be beautiful in its simplicity. But oh,
yeah,
and who will survive, and what will be left of them?
Exactly, and that I mean, it says it all right there, the caption of the film, and it's and it just amazes me how much they were able to do with the budget that they had too, because that was a pretty low budget film, I believe.
$300,000.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and they did that, and they made that. I mean, that's, you know, it's a like a cinematic masterpiece. I mean,
yeah.
it's really, you know,
spawned a genre. Really,
yeah. So, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We're talking about 1976 one, not the newer one. Yeah.
Little piece of trivia: the opening credits where they talk about it being a true story was read by an uncredited John Larroquette from Night Court.
Get out of here!
And they actually got him to do the same thing for the remake.
Get out of here! I didn't know that. Yeah.
So do you think, like, back in, like, in the 70s and the early 80s, when, you know, these horror movies and stuff, like, with the low, with, you know, not that much of a budget, it kind of brought out, you know, directors how to be more inventive on how they want to shoot different scenes and stuff.
I think so too,
for sure. And you look at some of the really great directors to come out of the period, and they start with horror movies because they're cheap and they make a profit. And and it really it gets them. I mean, you got talking James Cameron started with Roger Corman and Sam Raimi and Peter Jackson. They all start with horror movies and went on to blockbusters. But yeah, I think it teaches you how to make do with less. And so then when they give you a budget, you just go crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You take the creativity that you apply to those low budget films, and you know, because there's the one scene in Spider-Man 2 with Dr. Octopus's tentacles coming to life, and that looks like it's something taken totally out of Evil Dead 2. Like the camera,
you know
the scene I'm talking about where they come to wait, and it looks like just, you know, like when you see an Evil Dead 2, where I don't know what you would call it. I guess the Evil Deadness or whatever
the presence is coming.
Like how you see just kind of going through the forest. I mean, it's he got that.
Yeah. From that. You know, you read how they, no one shot film like that, and they were using like broomsticks and cameras, hanging from the broomstick to give it a steady cam effect before, because it didn't have a steady cam. It's absolutely nuts.
But how inventive though, too. And just, you know, being able to do more with less, I guess, in a way, really, because they didn't have anything, but they took what they knew about film and how to place a scene and how to make it effective and
how to do it cheap.
Yeah. So I definitely think it brings out their creativity.
Yeah, that's a good call out.
Yep.
Good call. Good number five. Starting off strong.
Man, we can only go downhill then, right?
All right, let's hear your number five, Sam.
My number five is from 2012. It is
relatively recent.
Woods.
Oh, love it.
That's a good one. I hadn't even thought about
that.
That's
on my list of 22.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Because while I'm making my list, I was like, what horror movies do I like watching? And I watch over and over again. And there was a lot, but I'm like, the ones that like really stick out to me, Cabin in the Woods really stuck out to me because I just thought it was like a nice fresh take on it. It was just like, the horror genre, because at this time it was the whole start of remakes and all these remaking Nightmare on Elm Street, remaking House of Wax, remaking Friday the 13th, and I just thought like Cabin in the Woods, I think it's kind of like a remake, but like a new twist on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, it works on so many levels. It is a fantastic movie.
And to me, like, you know, because I'm a pretty big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. The TV series, the movie's okay, but the series, it seemed like that movie, Cabin in the Woods, seemed to me to be like almost like a very special episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer without Buffy. Just because it's Joss Whedon applied all of his sensibilities to that film, I think, you know.
Well, truly, like, and I don't mean to take over your movie or Sam or anything. What I love about it is it works on multiple levels. It works just as a horror movie. It really does.
Yeah.
It works as kind of making fun of horror movies while not making fun of them, but as a hey, this is what happens. And one of the most interesting reads that I'd read about it was that the spoiler alert, the great old ones represent the horror movie audience.
Oh, that's an interesting.
And that you want, you say you don't, but you actually just want the same old thing. You want everyone to be that stereotype, because that then you spend your money on it. And so when you start looking at that, and that the higher up executive people that are looking at it are the movie studios, when you look at it that way, it works too. So I like multiple angles on a movie. So yeah, that's a great choice.
Yeah, it is. That's And also, like, we get to see a pre-Thor Chris Hemsworth.
I think it was in a few movies that people, like, he was like kind of the only person people knew.
But I think when that movie came out, I think it was actually filmed way before it was actually released.
Yes.
Because.
Oh yeah, it went around the festivals, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, and I think there was actually they were having some problems with distribution.
Yes.
So it kind of got put on the shelf for a little while, and then they just finally somehow something got worked out with the distribution rights, and they released it, and yeah, that movie's. That's a good pick, Sam.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, okay. Well, I guess back to you, Chris.
I didn't want to include, like, multiple things from the same director, and so I've had a hard time picking between my number four, picking between two movies, whether or not I was going to take The Thing or Halloween from John Carpenter.
Yeah.
I
was close to picking The Thing as well.
I think that I'm going to have to go with Halloween.
Oh, okay.
Just for for its iconic portrayal of Michael Myers. And of course, I am talking about the late 70s. I don't know if it was 78 version. Not the Rob Zombie remake. But and I'm only going to pick it for one scene in particular. Because this is the scene that I saw as a child and terrified me. Is the where she's just clothes hangered him to the eye.
Oh,
and
yes.
And his body's laying there out of focus.
Gotcha.
And you think he's dead, and she is breathing in the doorway, and the out of focus body sits up and moves his head and looks over at her. And that right there really, truly was the stuff of my childhood nightmares.
I know the exact scene that you're talking about. Yeah, and I can totally see where you're coming from with that. Yeah, that's a great film too. That's that, the music in that.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
that's so iconic. That dun, 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 I mean
that for the longest time was my wife's ringtone on my phone.
Oh, for real?
That gets me in trouble. The first time she called my phone, thinking that I had taken it with me into a store and I had left it in the car, that led to a fun discussion.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a great movie. And then, like a little trivia behind that movie, too, is, like, the mask for Michael Myers.
Yes.
Is, like, is it either an inverted or a spray-painted...
Spray-painted,
William Shatner mask.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yes. They because they went to the store and they wanted to find the one that should be theoretically the least scary, and they chose William Shatner, spray painted it white, and that was another fun trivia. It was shot in California, and was supposed and they were on such a tight budget that they would after a scene they would sweep up the autumn leaves that were blowing around so to move it to the next area. Because if you look, all the trees are still green.
Yeah.
Oh, get out of here. And I never knew that. That's interesting.
So, yeah, so many of the things that we just take for granted as part of the genre are there. And John Carpenter, just as a horror filmmaker,
has made
some great movies.
Yeah.
And this is really more or less last minute that I chose this over The Thing, but I just kept going, what's more?
The thing is one of my, like... And the only reason I kind of didn't pick it, although there's another movie that kind of falls into that category too, I think, on the list that I picked, where it's kind of like borderline sci-fi and horror,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it can be both too. And that's why I almost picked it, but no, The Thing is, I personally like The Thing better than Halloween. Halloween's awesome too.
I do too.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm making a list of my top five horror movies in terms of what I think the best movies are, The Thing is on there and Halloween is not.
Gotcha.
This is just my favorites.
Your favorites, yeah.
More or less, this is my nostalgia list of things that I've watched and probably talked about the most.
I gotcha. Yeah, that's a great pick. My number four would be George Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
The mm-hmm. And just, because I remember the first time I watched this movie, and I watched it with my dad, so I was kind of young. I think I might have been 10, 11, something like that, but maybe a little bit older, but not much older. And, you know, seeing it initially that it's black and white. Because I saw the black and white version, even though they've come out with remastered, colorized versions of it and everything. But the black and white one, I think, is far more effective in that film than the colorized version. The zombies just don't look as, I don't know, scary in color. At least those zombies don't. Mm-hmm. But I remember just watching it and just being like, wow, what is going on here? And just really being like feeling claustrophobic inside of that house watching that movie. And it's probably like one of the first movies where, you know, it really gave me that kind of sense of feeling where I felt like I was trapped in that house with those people. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like, you know, and it's that movie is really probably the movie that made me enjoy, like, the whole zombie genre.
Okay.
Even though it's kind of like, you know, it's, you know, giving credit probably a lot to the zombie genre, because, you know, it's like one of the first films that really kind of played on that theme. But,
It truly is the first that played the zombies that way rather than being mindless slaves.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah. And just, you know, having a swarm of zombies. It wasn't just like, you know, that theme, I think, is really kind of new in that film as well, where it's not just one zombie that's, you know, mindlessly running around a house or whatever. This is like, you know, a town of zombies is coming to you to get you inside of your house. You're boarding up your house. You're, you know, and it just, and yeah, that's just a really creepy thought and feeling, I think, that you get from watching that movie. That's still, you know, I could watch that movie over and over again because I just enjoy how that whole story.
So I'm going to have to say this. I'm going to just start having to pick other movies, or else my list is probably, because it's on my...
Is it on your list?
Yeah, okay. It was actually the next one on my list.
So for real.
So, but yeah, I watched this as a child on trick-or-treat night, and I remember looking out the window, and it was on in the afternoon for some reason on one of the local channels, because it was one of those movies that they showed on local channels. And I probably was like 10 or 11, and yeah, I watched this movie, and I looked out the windows as the trick-or-treaters started to come, and it was, I will never forget just how terrified I was. And I think that it's a true testament too, kind of like with Cabin of the Woods, is that there's multiple levels to that movie. And when I watched it as an adult, I saw things that I certainly didn't see the racial undertones of the movie.
Yeah.
And the paranoia that comes from, you know, from the 60s in general, and the way and that ending.
Yeah, the ending is just so, that is a powerful ending to that film. Just a
gut punch.
Oh, it is. Yeah, because you make it, then to George Romero's credit, yeah, like, he's probably one of the, during that time period, making, like, the main protagonist is an African-American.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's, you know, during films of that time period, you never saw that,
right?
You know, and it just, you want, you know, watching that film, you want him to survive, you want him to make it, and like you said, the ending. Maybe a little bit of a spoiler here, but
I don't know if spoilers count for movies from
the 1960s. Yeah, that's true. That's, yeah, we're talking, yeah. But yeah, at the end, you know, he gets shot, thinking that he was just another zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's a powerful ending right there.
And I don't think it's a coincidence in George Romero's part that, you know, he's shot by, you know, in the racially charged 60s, he's shot by white police
who
see him as nothing except for one of the zombie crowds. So they just take him out and...
Yeah, because even the people that are gathering up all the zombies, they're shooting them, they're hooting and hollering, you know, and just, so yeah.
Absolutely a wonderful filmmaking from George Romero. So.
Yeah.
And that's where it began, as the black guy always dies.
Yeah, there you go. I guess that maybe he started that too.
Yeah. All right, My number four. My number four is from 2005. It's a British import called The Descent.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I've always wanted to see this film. I have never seen it.
Okay, The Descent, just a recap. The Descent is about a group of ladies that are going cave climbing into these caves. And
spelunking, if you will. I just enjoy saying the word spelunking, so I'm sorry for
hey, you. Hey, who doesn't, though?
And then they run into these underground creatures, and they have to battle their way to try to get out. But, you know, just with that, you know, it's a good horror movie. But then there's always the sub story that's involved. Like, the main character, a year before this all started happening, her husband and her daughter is killed in a car accident, and she's still recovering from this. Now, fast forward a year later, this is why they took her to go cave diving and everything, and all this starts to happen again, and it, like, messes with her psyche. The women in this film are incredible. The action sequences in this film, or how they fight these creatures, is incredible, and it's just, it's like a no holds bar fight fest in the dark, and I just love this movie, and that's why I put it on my top five list, because I told people as soon as I got done watching it, I'm like, you have to see this movie. Like, I don't care about anything else. You have to see The Descent, because this movie is awesome. So, gotta check that out. That's how I felt about The Descent. That's my number four.
I really enjoyed it, and a lot in terms of it being terrifying. I'm also somewhat claustrophobic in general.
Yeah.
So, there were times during that movie where it was, like, almost difficult to breathe.
Oh, really?
Watching what they're...
See, man, I have been wanting to watch that movie for quite some time. It's on my list, but it's just... I have not found time, so unfortunately, yeah, I have nothing to add.
If you're afraid of the dark, you will feel that too, because yes. The way they shot it, and it's just like, these creatures are just right there, and you... For me, I was basically on the edge of my seat. I'm like, would you just go already, or don't make a sound? Just do something. And yeah, these women, I mean, they're tough. They are tough. So, kudos.
Yes. All right, so we're on to number three.
Number three.
Well, I'm going to since my original number three was Night of the Living Dead, I'm going to swap that out, and I will throw Jaws,
which was my
also ran in this.
That's
because it's not truly it's not truly a horror movie in the traditional sense, but it kind of gave way to that creature, the unseen, in a place where you normally don't feel you feel at. What's the word I'm looking for?
Like, at ease. It's not really, you know, I think before the film, people felt kind of comfortable in the water. Maybe not comfortable is not the word, but...
But you weren't scared for your life every time you walked into the ocean. And I'm sure I was just at Myrtle Beach this year, and we saw sharks in the water while we were in there.
Yeah.
Between us and the shore,
I'm sure the first thing that popped in your head was Jaws.
My first thought beyond getting the kids out of the water was, it's just the way it is. That score by John Williams, the direction by Steven Spielberg, and you know the fact that they couldn't get the shark to work made the movie better because you didn't see it, and it was just a constant fear. So. We watched Jaws that night as a family, actually, and
that's awesome. That movie, that is, you know, that's one of the greatest films ever made. I think, as far as I'm concerned, really, just you know, there is that fear that movie generated, you know, the score, like you're saying, but just even like the dialogue, just the character interaction, like there's that interaction between the characters on the boat.
Oh,
where they have, they're just sitting at a table talking.
Yeah.
And that's like,
and they're having fun. And then all of a sudden they're comparing scars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that story comes out.
Yeah.
And that story is as terrifying as anything in the movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just
yeah.
hearing about getting picked off one at a time, yeah.
Yep, and just, oh, yeah. And, just, and it's just people sitting around a table talking, and it's just so compelling watching mm-hmm. that scene. I could watch that scene again and again, and it's, you know, nothing overly dramatic happens in that scene, really, like nothing, you know, that you see, but it's all about the storytelling, and that's, that... That movie has it all, really. Just as far as that goes.
And just the fact that when you finally do see the shark, you're just like, oh, this ain't good at all.
Oh, it's so big.
Yeah.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger boat. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, man. That movie's a masterpiece. Hands down. that's an excellent choice. I guess that'll take us to... my number three, which is, I picked Clive Barker's Hellraiser. Yes. Based off of the story of the Telltale Heart, I believe.
The Hellbound.
Hellbound Heart, that's yes. right. Telltale Heart, that's... Edgar, yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. I was an English teacher, I don't know if you know that.
There you go. Now you do. that movie is just... That's just a great movie, I think, too. And it's that whole thing where the effects are really spot on, the way, you know, and at a time, I mean, and it's, that film still kind of holds up effects-wise because a lot of the effects are practical effects. That movie came out in 1987, I believe.
That sounds about right.
And just, you know, it deals with all kinds of themes of, you know, like sin and just everything that you shouldn't do. And it's just a really good story. Like, you know, Clive Barker directs it. He wrote the story. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there have been several iterations of sequels and movies that have been based off of those characters afterwards that have really, really kind of taken the whole series in the wrong direction, if you ask me, and just none of them have just
mashed really, up to the yeah. power of the original.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I truly terrifying work. Clive Barker, just his writing in general.
Yeah.
And the couple things that I've seen that he's directed, I enjoy very much. Pinhead is iconic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I remember the first time I watched that film, too, seeing Pinhead, seeing the Cenobites. You know, that's like, man, that's just such, you know, the imagery of them. It's just...
They're terrifying.
They are,
And the imagery in the film, I remember watching it for the first time, and the feeling of unease in general.
Yeah,
like, I felt almost nauseous watching it.
Yep, it's the same thing with the hooks. You know, it's kind of going back to
pulling the flesh apart.
Yeah, man.
They really... Primal fears is that right there. Yeah, it really ties into that. So,
yeah, those things freak me out, dude.
Yeah,
the Chatterer.
Was he
the first one?
He was. Yeah, that one exactly. And he's like one of the characters where it's like, you know, that's just a disturbing image. Just seeing the Chatterer, I was kind of disappointed they didn't really include that portrayal of that character in many of the other ones. He may have been in the second one, maybe, but I mean, he doesn't say anything. He just sits there and you see the teeth chattering.
Yeah.
And just the imagery in that, it's just so, it's kind of like trying to think of his name, the artist
Geiger.
Thank you very much. Like what Geiger has done, kind of where you get the same kind of dark imagery, but you know, a little bit more colorful, maybe. I don't know, but and I don't know if colorful is the right word I should be using, but It's a scary movie.
I remember the first time I watched it, it was like several years after it came out, and I had to watch it like during the day, and I would like switch channels back and forth.
That's always a sign of an excellent horror movie.
Yeah, exactly.
When you just are like, I can't watch this in the dark right now.
I need to pause it. This is too much.
Let me switch back. Like, it's on TV. It's on HBO. So let me. I gotta get through it, and I'm just like, I can take the imagery of Pinhead, but like the other ones, like Chatter and some of the other ones, like there was a woman one too, and I was just like, what? It's like, that's just plain disgusting, and like,
yeah,
you know, the guy's skin is off of them, and he's walking around skinless. I'm like, this is messed up.
Yeah. And that's kind of the reason why I chose that one, because it's one of the ones where, you know, it is very, you know, the imagery in it is very alarming, I guess. All right, Sam.
All right. My number three is from 1996, and it is Scream.
Scream. That's a good one,
that's
too.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Wes Craven.
And the reason why I picked Scream, because, you know, we've been talking about some of the classics like Halloween and Friday the 13th and everything. And, you know, at the time, it was, you know, just sequels. There was, like, I think, five or six Nightmare on Elm Street's out.
Yeah.
And seven and eight of Friday the 13th. And I think Scream put the audience in the movie, because everything that they were doing in the movie, you were doing it in the theaters. Like, hey, don't go in there. Hey, don't say that. It's like, I've said that all the time when I'm sitting there watching the movie.
Yeah,
the rules.
The rules, exactly. And if I recall correctly, even like around the time that movie came out, there was kind of a lull where I don't think there really were. There was like almost like a horror film vacuum where there weren't really any horror films being made around that time frame.
Certainly, yeah. You know? And all of the big franchises from the 80s
kind of sputtered out
had kind of sputtered
it
to where it was just, if stuff was coming out, it was just copycats and it wasn't stuff
right.
that was...
And it was more funny than it was horror.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, when that movie came out, that like injected new life into that whole genre, I feel.
Right.
And I mean, that spawned sequels as well.
Yeah.
You know, that movie did. And again, like Wes Craven, he can do that with films. Like he comes up with this idea, and it's just, you know, iconic. Scream is iconic.
Right. So, like, what's your favorite movie? You're like, what?
Yeah, well, and being a horror movie junkie, and the very first scene, one of the things they did really good in there is, A, they got Drew Barrymore, the biggest star in the movie,
to
be in the very first scene, and that's it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And if she can die...
Then anybody
can
die. Yes, absolutely.
And when they do the
like, jump the shark for Pete's sake, you can't kill a Bond.
That's right.
Man, it's been a while since I've seen that movie. That's
and when they ask
me
about who the killer in Friday the 13th is, and I think to myself right away, the first movie's Jason's mom.
And then that's where
that's where they go. So yeah, while kind of poking at the horror movies, it still seemed to have a real reverence for them. While poking fun at all of the tropes and the things that happen in movies, that they certainly did an excellent job of obeying them.
And coming from Wes Craven, you know, he helped create a lot of those tropes.
Certainly,
you know, so it's nice to see that. You know, in a way, he's kind of poking fun at himself at the same time. And
oh, sure, the janitor named Freddy.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's right. Because he even had a sweater, right?
Right.
Like with the, yep. Oh, that's right. That's great. All right. Let's see. We move on
All
to
right.
Chris again.
This is for number two.
Number two.
Well, number two. I will say, I'm having to mess up my list here a little bit because of My number one being the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh!
So number two, I will go with Alien.
And that's a great film. Yeah.
In space, no one can hear you scream. Not so much the sequels in terms of horror. They changed genre, became action film, became whatever else they became. But that first one is just a claustrophobic.
That absolutely is. That scene with the xenomorph coming out of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I saw the movie, I didn't. I mean, I probably saw it at an age where I probably should have known or heard about that scene.
Right.
But I had no planning. I had no idea that that was coming. When it happens and you're like, what am I seeing?
Right.
Chest burster.
Yeah, just the creature itself, the xenomorph, the fact that it has different life cycles and it changes and it didn't look like anything that had existed at that point. Like,
yeah.
But that you without having it explained in any way, shape, or form, you understand its life cycle. You understand.
Yeah, that's true.
You
that's
understand
true,
exactly.
Yeah.
They didn't have to give it a backstory. You saw the backstory. You saw an alien that had its chest burst open, and then later when it happens, you're like, "Oh my gosh, that's what happened."
Yeah.
Just some great filmmaking from Ridley Scott.
And that's another film too where it's, you know, like you said, claustrophobic. You're like, you're in space. You're stuck in, you know. How can you be? There's really no other place where you could be more confined, really, mm-hmm. than in a spaceship in outer space, and
you really don't see the alien too much. I mean,
yeah,
you don't, and it's in the shadows. Yeah. And the idea that became, I mean, it's the first time I can really remember that the real bad guy is not the creature. The creature is just real living. It's the real bad guy is the corporation.
Yeah, yeah,
that made them go.
Yeah. To get it. Yeah.
And that becomes a running theme through Aliens and as well, but everything for money, right? And that becomes a theme later, but I really dug that movie.
Yeah, that's a great film too. And again, it's like that's where like the horror is such an, you know, that storytelling and that, it's so intelligent, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like a, not so much like a slasher film where, you know, there's, you know, like you're saying, you see the xenomorph go through its life cycles. They don't have to explain that. We kind of get that as we see it unfold in the film, and it's, you know, it's not a simple idea by any means, really.
No,
you know,
but it's just a vicious natural cycle, and the creature's just terrifying.
Speaking of
H.R. Geiger, I mean,
oh yeah, yeah,
my gosh, the mouth within the mouth,
the
elongated head. It's just
the first time you see that in a film coming out.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, what am I seeing?
The saliva and and just the fact that it looks like a techno creature, not like a rave or something, but like it's some sort of technology mixed with
organic type of
It kind of blends in with the circuitry and stuff of the ship.
Right.
I mean, like it slowly like came down, and you know Ripley's looking over, and it's like, oh, it was standing right there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that'll take me to my number two. Which also kind of in the same type of sci-fi genre, if you will, I picked Event Horizon.
Oh, terrifying!
Yeah, that movie, and that movie when I saw that movie, I didn't expect it to be terrifying either.
Mm-hmm.
But that movie, when I watched it, I was like, man, this is really just really kind of creeping me out. And I think that's where, you know, when sci-fi is done well,
yes,
it just, you know, it's amazing. And Event Horizon, I think, is kind of like one of those sci-fi movies where it is done really well. Because everything about that movie, I just remember immediately being sucked into that film. Just Sam Neill's talking about Sam Neill's character. I can't remember what his character's name is.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember any of the characters. I just remember the actors.
exactly. Lawrence Fishburne's mm-hmm. in it. The director's Paul W.S. Anderson. But, yeah, like, when... to go back to Sam Neill's character talk, just explaining the whole wormhole type thing where they're bending time and space, and it just something, you know, he takes that paper, folds it in half. I'm doing it with my hands. Nobody can see that. but I'm folding the, you know, he's folding the paper in half. Yeah. He's folding the paper in half, takes the pencil and goes through. This is what we're doing. We're bending time and space, explaining how the Event Horizon ship travels through time, explaining how it disappeared while they were doing that and then don't know what really happened. Then all of a sudden, the ship shows up again. And then they go to the ship and see all the horrors that have occurred on the ship. That movie is just, yeah.
I saw it in the theater.
Oh, did you really?
And the sound in the theater where things were like behind you and the surround sound, it was an experience. We all left. My friends and I all left incredibly creeped out by that movie. And I think it's really underrated.
I think it is too, because that's the thing that's kind of funny, because I remember going to the comic book shop I used to go to all the time, and they got like an Event Horizon t-shirt in. Really? And and it was just a weird thing. They're like, hey, do you want this? And I'm like, okay, yeah. And like, I had the shirt and I'd never even seen the movie. I actually didn't see the movie until probably a year or so later, like on cable, I think. Mm-hmm. I watched it like on Showtime or Cinemax or something like that, and watched it, and I'm like, my God, this movie is so good. Does anybody know about this movie?
It felt Lovecraftian in space. Yeah. Totally. The madness and...
Yeah, yeah. Just, yeah. And it kind of a slow burn, too, really. It kind of starts out, you know, but just, you know, the acting in it's fantastic. That movie, I love that movie.
When you actually see the video, the just clips of it and how crazy. Oh yeah, and the eyes.
Oh god, yeah. Oh man,
wow. Yeah, you know what, Rick? I think me and you were like on the same page on my number two. It was either go with my heart or go with my fear. And I went with my heart, but if I would have gone with my fear, it would have been Event Horizon as number two.
Gotcha, yeah, yeah.
For me, because like you said, that movie kind of messed me up.
Yeah, and I watched it in the middle of the night by myself, and just, I couldn't stop watching it, and just, I remember when it was over, same thing where I just felt just really just completely creeped out.
Well, that's the thing is, I've seen enough horror movies in theaters, and I didn't walk out of a theater like I walked out of the theater after Event Horizon, where I still felt uneasy, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the reason that film works so well is that it doesn't take, you know, it like applies science to this to this stuff, you know, where, you know, it's... Did they go to hell? I don't know. They never really say it's hell, but
it's probably just another dimension. But it's a dimension explained for by science. It's
and we're like a dimension of madness. Yeah, like a Lovecraftian type thing where it's something that humans were never meant to see, and they see it and go completely mad.
It's the Frankenstein monster. We didn't stop to think if we should.
We just did, and it's the repercussions of it. And I think that's why that movie just kind of sucked me in, just gave me this creepy feeling, especially because I didn't expect it, because I didn't really know the film that I was watching, what it was going to be about. And, that's a great film.
Yeah, yeah, like I said, when I was making this list, if I was... Number two, I had a toss between two films. If I was going to go with my fear, I was going to go with Event Horizon. But I went with my heart. And my number two is the 1987. And in previous podcasts, I've talked about this movie.
Uh-oh.
It's The Goonies.
And again, I love this movie. And that is The Monster Squad.
I gotcha.
So I had to go with my heart, because I'm like, I can watch this movie over and over again. I just love the fact, again, that they gave tribute to the classic monsters and made them dangerous. I mean, you know, if we as kids and everything looked at, you know, Dracula and Wolfman and stuff, we're like, oh, with all the new CGI and stuff, they're trying to make them look cooler. But with Monster Squad, it was just the classic monsters looking like the classic way. And you realize how dangerous the original monsters are. And, yeah. And these kids are now facing monsters that they, like, watched on TV and read in comic books. And like, oh, these guys are really that dangerous. And that's, I just like Monster Squad.
Nah, that's a good one. I think, like, Monster Squad did to, like, the Universal Monsters what, like, the Goonies did to, like, pirate treasure movies. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of took that and just gave a new spin to it, and just, you know, that is a really entertaining movie.
I like that one. I'll be honest, I have not seen it since it was relatively new. I loved it, and I don't know why I haven't watched it since then. Yeah. I think maybe I have to dust that one off for
actually,
the kids.
I have it on the DVD. Wes and I watched it, I think, a year or so ago, something like that. Because it's not, you know, violently gory or anything like right. that, but it's just
my kids, you know, like the creepy stuff. So
I think they would love that.
Yeah, they'll like Monster Squad.
I'm sure. I remember liking it, and I guess it was probably about 1989 that I saw it. 90 was that sound right?
Yeah,
it came out 1987.
Yeah, so and I didn't see it in the theater, so I saw it on video VHS. Like probably a year later or so.
Yeah.
All right, so we're on to
number one, I think.
Number one.
Yeah.
My number one film, well, was The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so I'm bumping number two up to number one, and I'm going with The Exorcist.
The Exorcist. Oh, yeah.
As a child who was raised in a somewhat religious household, the idea of demonic possession was terrifying to me. Here's a little story. Most of the movies I watched, the horror movies I watched edited versions of them that they would show on regular TV.
Okay, yeah.
And then, so, The Exorcist is a movie that, like with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the edited version isn't that much different than, because there's not a lot of blood in it or a lot of whatever. Man, when I first, the first time I watched the unedited Exorcist and I saw the way that girl talked...
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. I can't believe they had a 12-year-old say all that or however old she was.
And there's, because I remember going to see that when they had some sort of anniversary of it.
And they added her walking down the steps.
Oh, God, yeah. It's creepy. That is so creepy. Yeah. That's another movie where they just, man, what year did that come out?
73, 72, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know, they just had a way with movies during that time frame where they could do stuff that just made it super creepy and just...
William Friedkin directed that, and that's just masterful. It's based on a book and everything, but that movie led to from like 1974 until 1985, everyone was scared of Satan.
Between
Rosemary's Baby, those two things, like, everyone was just, I mean...
And Rosemary's Baby, that's a great film, too.
It is.
Yeah, but in a totally different way. I mean, that one's creepy, too, but it's not...
That's all about the build. The Exorcist has, I don't want to say has more payoff, because Rosemary's Baby has a lot of payoff, but there's a lot of pea green soup. There's a lot of... There's a lot of just...
It's stuff you kind of haven't really seen in a film before, I think, when that movie came out.
Cause
I watched a video recently that they showed on, I forget who shared it online, but basically people's reactions, like the audience reaction to the film after they saw it, like when it first released, and just how horrified the people were, One woman like left the theater, left her friend in the theater because she couldn't take watching the movie anymore. And, I mean, and you just don't hear that about any movie that comes out anymore. You know? So yeah, that's definitely That's a classic for sure. Yeah. So, I guess that brings it to my number one. And I kind of had a toss up between this. I kind of wanted to do something new, but I kind of chose something kind of older, not super old or anything like that. It was a toss up between Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, mm-hmm. which I really enjoyed, mm-hmm. But I went with Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street. Okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, one of the reasons why I picked this one is my son is. Kind of his name is based off of Wes Craven. His name's Wesley, so that's kind of like where one of the inspirations for his name, not the only inspiration, but one of them. But also just because Nightmare on Elm Street, I just thought was a great movie because it dealt with like dreams and how the dreams can affect you in real life. It just played on a lot of those themes and again, Wes Craven, he did Scream. You know, he's created so many icons mm-hmm. that have just worked so well in the horror genre, and it's just
The first one's truly terrifying.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And as the character started making more wisecracky rather than just being truly scary, I kind of watered it. He became a fan favorite. People were rooting for him.
Exactly.
And one, you don't necessarily want him to win. You're rooting for Heather Langenkamp and Johnny Depp and all them. But yeah, that is a terrifying movie.
Yeah, that one scene where I think the first girl that dies in the film, where she's on the ceiling spinning around, and then you see her stomach get slashed, and it just, I mean, that the way they did that, like I you know, watching it now, I'm not sure how they actually filmed that.
Right.
You know, like now today they would have used CGI and it probably would look kind of cheesy, but. I mean, man, that scene is just like, what is going on? You know, what am I watching?
And the dread of thinking how long could I stay awake in the same situation?
Yeah.
Which, you know, Wes Craven got the idea for that because he read newspaper articles about teenagers in one neighborhood who were dying in their sleep.
Oh, for real? Yeah. I did not
and
know that.
From that created Freddy Krueger, and I don't, that says something about his creativity, I guess. Truly terrifying to think about. But.
Absolutely, yeah. That's so many good scenes. And there's like, you know, and they've done like you know, they've redone that movie, and it is just not the same. No. Like there's the one scene where Freddy's coming out of the wall
mm-hmm.
in the original, and they kind of did another take of that in the newer version of the film, but they did it with CGI and it just looks so cheesy. But I think the one that they did in the original, I think it came out in 1984,
that sounds about right.
I think that's the date. That's correct. Yeah, 1984. I think that looks so much more realistic and so much more effective, where it's just, you know, and they probably did something as simple as just have a sheet on a wall instead of a wall and just push the face against it, but
and even just like the how Freddy looked back in the original was like way better than the remake.
And the backstory, like no one should root for Freddy Krueger. He's a child killer,
exactly.
Who then wants vengeance by killing more kids? I mean, that's just terrible.
It is. It's absolutely horrible.
But the sounds, the jump rope girls, the 1-2, Freddy's coming for you, and on the pipes and everything.
Oh yeah, creepy sounds. Yeah, everything.
Great movie.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my number one.
All right, that's a good number one. All right, my number one horror movie, is from 1996, and the reason why I picked this movie is when people ask me what are my favorite movies of all time, no matter what genre. This one is usually either in the top 5 or in the top 10. So, it was from the mind of Mr. Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino.
That is a good movie.
That's a fun movie.
That is a fun movie, yeah.
That is the first time that I had seen, Robert Rodriguez and actually even Quentin Tarantino, because I think before then, Quentin Tarantino had like Reservoir Dogs, and that was
Pulp
that was
Fiction. His thing. But yeah,
From Dusk Till Dawn was my first introduction to Quentin Tarantino. Even though Robert Rodriguez is the director, it was like, okay, who are these guys? And then seeing George Clooney from going from The Facts of Life,
yeah.
Now doing, you know, this movie, I'm like, what's George Clooney? He's from ER. What's he's in this movie? And you know, I knew it was about vampires because, you know, with the previews and everything.
Yeah.
But how it starts out is just so, like legendary.
Yeah.
That's funny because I think when I saw it in the theater, and maybe I didn't see the same trailers or something, but I distinctly remember when I saw it, I didn't think there were going to be vampires in it.
Yeah,
and I remember like because it, and it's almost like the whole movie. That's the thing I love about the movie too. Though is like the big first half of the movie or whatever. It seems like there's this.
It's a Tarantino movie at the beginning.
Yeah,
it feels like a Tarantino movie.
Exactly. Yeah, this, where there's a lot of character development, the interaction. Like you got these psychopathic brothers, and
the geckos,
yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, stuff gets real,
right?
We see.
I think I remember, you know, watching when I was watching the preview. It was like because Selma Hayek like kind of turned into a vampire. She was like, "Welcome to slavery," and George Clooney was like, "No thanks, I got a wife." And I was like, and you know, you see him shoot the gun, and I was like, and it's like From Dusk Till Dawn, like, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. And Tom Savini's in that.
Yes, he is. Yeah. With Harvey Keitel.
Oh yeah, Harvey Keitel.
And so when I'm like, you know, and Cheech Marin is, and
that's yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He said Cheech Marin, I automatically think of one speech.
Yeah, exactly.
That we won't discuss here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm like,
oh, that's fantastic.
I'm watching the movie and stuff, and I'm like, the whole my favorite scene is literally the beginning at the store.
Oh. Yeah, what's the name of that guy? He's a fantastic actor. He was in Kill Bill.
I can't remember.
He's in Red State from Kevin Smith as well.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Oh, man, I can't think of it either.
And they're having the argument like, no, he gave that cop the look. He's like, I didn't give the cop the look.
Yeah.
Get into the whole gunfight and everything, and you just knew as soon as that scene ended, it's like, this is going to be one messed up ride.
Right.
Yeah.
Michael Parks, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Just a bit role in that movie, but man, nailed it.
Yeah, that's a fun movie. That's a great movie.
Yeah. So, my number one is From Dusk Till Dawn.
All right, well, I guess that's, we've gone on for a little bit over an hour here, so I think we're good. Yeah, that's our list, I guess.
Yeah.
So, hope you guys enjoyed listening to them. And, and I guess we'll go from here. We'll sign out, and thanks for listening. Check us out on Facebook, All My Issues, and the website, allmyissues.com.
Yeah.
All right.